Hi, this is Tansy for Galactic Chat. Something a bit different this time. The following panel, Where Are All the Wonder Women?, was recorded at Continuum 8, the National Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention, in Melbourne on the 10th of June 2012. The panellists involved were Russell Blackford, Alice Clark, myself, Tansy Rayner-Roberts, and Grant Watson. The panel was reproduced with permission of those involved, and we hope you enjoy it.
Cool. Hi, good afternoon everyone. Welcome to Where Are All the Wonder Women? First up, and I think most importantly, may I please introduce my name is Grant Watson. Now please introduce our three co-panelists. Going from one side to the other, we have Tansy Rayner-Roberts, Alice Clark, and Russell Blackford. There's no shortage of superheroes in the world, for start. If we're looking at particularly at the American superhero concept, dominated by DC and Marvel over the past 7-8 decades, there's no shortage of superhero characters, and within that, there is definitely no shortage, I think, of female superheroes.
Oh, really?
Really?
If we're talking about characters that have existed in a comic, characters, I think there's actually, I'm not going to argue there's parity, I would never argue there's parity, it's not 50% of them, but I think there is a vast array of female superheroes. Yet, when we come to look at the ones that achieve, say, a mainstream iconic success, ones that are widely known across the developed world, that list diminishes extremely rapidly. And certainly then, by comparison, the number of male superheroes that the average person might know, it's very, very imbalanced.
Okay, I am going to both agree and disagree with you.
Cool.
There are definitely many female characters in comic books, and I love how most of them die so that the male superheroes have something to fight for. But there are certainly not that many female superheroes that last for more than look, there's a chick who isn't wearing very many clothes, so I assume she's got powers, but we've never seen her again.
I did say they were good female superheroes, just to defend myself.
But there are problems in the cultural resonance of any of these characters. Once you get past Wonder Woman, it becomes hard. Is that the idea?
I think it is, yes. Certainly Wonder Woman is sort of the female superhero. She's the one that most people would at least be vaguely familiar with.
I think generally when it comes to female superheroes, and I will agree with Grant, there are, if you look at the history of it, there are a lot of characters who are female, who are in comics, many of whom have superpowers. But the level of support that you see those characters receive is always depressing. And there are absolutely, even if you have a superhero book which has a lot of female characters in it, then it's very, very rare to have a team that treats the female characters with the same respect. So that when you do find a team that does, you cling to it and it's a wonderful thing and you tell all your friends. But it's very, very depressing how often what look like promising characters, female characters, or potentially interesting female characters, then disappear, get killed off, suddenly have their, horrible things happen to their powers, or mysteriously need to be carried to safety, even though they have equivalent powers to the men on their team, which is referring to a recent book that I'm still a little bit angry about. So you do have to dig. You have to really hunt to find the good, interesting ones, and then you get cross to say, well, why aren't these really good ones being given their solo book, or why aren't they being... And when they do occasionally get a solo book, why don't people buy them?
Yeah, that's a big part of the question. I think Marvel and DC, but at least DC's got Wonder Woman, Marvel doesn't have an equivalent character that iconic. I mean, you could think of characters that could challenge, and with the success of the recent Avengers movie, maybe the Black Widow is in a position to challenge, but they do not have a character at that rank at the moment.
As far as recognition,
why do they keep failing even when they do try? As far as recognition goes with the public.
Is it perhaps because they don't have actual women writing them, so they don't ring true?
Because they're written more as a male fantasy rather than an actual person?
But at the moment, Marvel has more female creators working on their books than DC. DC has more female-led titles, but it only has like 2 female writers in their whole stable. So it's really odd that they're both getting they're both doing slightly better at one thing and appallingly worse at something else.
I think it is clear to say that they're not actually doing well.
No, they're just doing better than the other
one. They're not even doing close to well.
No. But Marvel has more female characters than DC, but no, or one at a time, female-led title.
DC rebooted all of their titles so they could add more diversity and make it be more like the real world. So they got rid of all of their disabled characters, or one of them. Right. They reduced the number of female characters in the Justice League. They got rid of one of their three major lesbian characters, which is Renee Montoya, who I am still mourning, and decided to get rid of all their female writers. Like that. Right.
Or just mysteriously not hire them, you know. It was just... Somehow it just turned out that way because all the men got hired and then, you know...
Well, it turns out that all the men are just so much better than all of the women in the entire world.
That was actually...
Who would have thought?
That was DC's like editorial defence, was we asked lots of women, they just... None of them came up with pictures that we liked.
Yes, because they included women. Or
at least DC
stories,
do have Wonder Woman.
So why? That's actually
they
just
do,
done
but,
with that.
I mean, let's talk about Wonder Woman, though.
That's what I was going to say.
They took away her pants recently. They put her back in a skirt... Yeah, well, they briefly redid her outfit so she was wearing pants, which would be infinitely more practical in a fight. But then they put her back in a really short miniskirt, and Dan Didio's like, yes, she will stay like that, so we can see all of her legs all of the time. That even that makes no sense.
Can I ask the...
Sorry, Tantra, are we going to say something?
I was just going to say, as far as Wonder Woman's pants, which I think does need to be addressed, I was recently reading some of the Gail Simone run with Nicola Scott as the artist. And what I think is really interesting about Wonder Woman, I think we can get overly obsessed about whether she's wearing pants, you know, whether she's wearing the short skirt or the trousers or whatever. The art does make a difference, though, because to me it doesn't. It's not the costume so much. To me, it's how she's posed, because you can have somebody in, say, a leotard who looks like an athlete who actually looks like they can catch a falling car or whatever, and then you can have somebody who's in a leotard which also has a plunging neckline and mysteriously looks like they're a pole dancer. And it could technically be the same costume. It's often how they're posed and whether they're drawn as if they're an actual person or somebody who's there literally posing for the reader.
Those broken back positions that they put women in are the thing that's really kind of demeaning of the female characters. It's not the actual costumes.
In the Avengers poster, they started out having Black Widow doing the, look, you can see my boobs and ass at the same time pose, while all the men were going, and then they released another poster which had Black Widow looking awesome and Iron Man at the front saying, hey, look, I have pecs and an ass and can somehow swivel to show you both at the same time. I loved that they did that.
But I was just going to suggest or ask you guys, it seems to me, and maybe I'm wrong, that there was actually a golden age for female characters, and it was 1980s X-Men, at the time when Chris Claremont was writing it, and we had all of these very powerful... I mean, I know they killed off Phoenix, and this whole thing about Jean Grey, but they had a whole series of very powerful, very prominent female characters, and it was incredibly popular with women as well as men. You know, that was the real heyday.
Wait, you said
Marvel,
that women read comics too?
well,
traditionally they hadn't. I mean, if you go back to the beginning of the Silver Age, no, they didn't. I mean,
well, they were reading comics.
Marvel...
They weren't reading superhero comics. Comics was a much broader medium in the 60s.
I mean, when you think of where Marvel started in with Fantastic Four, X-Men, Avengers, and others in the Silver Age, the major female characters were Jean Grey in her original incarnation as Marvel Girl. Sue Storm as Invisible Girl, and the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp. They were all kind of air-headed, fluffy characters who are continually in trouble, whatever. It was clearly written for teenage boys and younger boys. It was not written for women at all. I doubt that many women or girls did actually read the comics,
and
but by the 1980s they
the
were. I'm saying the 1980s X-Men under Chris Claremont was the golden age. Women did actually start reading it, and these characters were powerful and effective. But those characters have never become iconic beyond the comic medium. And, of course, 1980s X-Men has been and gone now. So I was going to ask you what you thought of 1980s X-Men and why what Claremont was doing has never really kind of come to fruition in the 20 years or so it's happened since Claremont first left X-Men.
The 1980s was a really interesting period, I think, for ensemble books and women generally because, I mean, I was... as Grant is well aware. I recently finally read Sensational She-Hulk from the late 80s, which is another great female... It's a female-led, humorous comic, which I loved. I hadn't realised all the time he was recommending it. I wasn't reading it. That it was 1989, which is the same period when I love Justice League the best, which is the late 80s again. An ensemble book, but an ensemble book with multiple female characters... Mm. Who all look different to each other, which is a key point with women in a teen book. They look like they are different people and not just the brunette and the blonde or whatever. And really interesting, complex funny stories that sort of subverted superhero comics a bit. So I think the 80s maybe was a really interesting time for character-driven comics generally.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's...
Arguably, we've gone backwards in the last 20 years. I guess that's part
I think
of what
the
I'm suggesting to
the X-Men as a franchise does have a tendency to fall back on that. I mean, there was one comic in the last 2 years that has now, of course, been cancelled. Of course it has, which is called Generation Hope. Which was, again, a teen book where the majority of the characters were women, the leader of the team was a woman, and it had a very, comparatively, very large female readership compared to
what
other
What about The Runaways?
Yeah, it's another
one. Which is a female-led superhero book with chicks who are, some of them are occasionally men, but that's one of the problems with being a Skrull.
Yeah.
But Runaways and Generation Hope didn't sell very well.
Runaways sold very well. But it tailed off
but it
after...
it went down.
It tailed off after it started
and
really
Generation
sucking,
Hope never sold.
Well, it's a change of writers, which is usually often what kills
Well, it changed to Joss Whedon, which kind of saved it a bit. It went down because Brian K. Vaughan can't write female characters. He started off doing really well, and then he started sucking. Then Joss Whedon saved it. Then it really sucked. After Joss Whedon.
Why is it then that we can... So we're already managing to point to strong female and interesting female characters and female-dominated books in teams.
Yes.
Why then does that not translate to the solo superhero?
Well, it kind of is. We've got Batwoman. Batwoman is one of the... Well, I think the best superheroes out at the moment in the DCNU because she doesn't completely suck and her costume actually makes vaguer sense than any of the others.
But the interesting thing about Batwoman as well is not only that she's an interesting complex character, she's written very well, beautiful art, men are reading the comic and really enjoying it.
Because they keep having scenes where she gets out of the shower and then has sex with a chick.
But they don't have that many. The current title for a comic which has a lesbian superhero I think has actually been really, really not pushing that aspect
it
as much as I would have
really,
expected.
But I, before I came
maybe
here,
they're still expecting it to.
I read three issues while I was just waiting just for fun. And in the first one, she went on a date with a woman, then had a shower. In the second one, she had a shower, then very slowly got dressed while Flamebird got dressed. Then the third one, she had a very graphic 6-page sex scene with Maggie Sawyer.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
So that's what they.
That isn't what the men are. As male readers are saying.
Also, Maggie
like
Sawyer
comic.
Is now 20 years younger, which isn't that.
Sorry, you were going to say something there,
right? Well, all I was going to say, back in the 80s, when we had these kind of very character driven books with a lot of female characters, some very strong characters, X-Men was the best selling book at the time, Chris Claremont was God in those days.
Yeah,
I was reading these things. Men were reading these things. I was popular with men and women. They were immensely popular. And far, far more so than today. The number of comics sold then compared to today, much, much greater. And we weren't reading Claremont's X-Men because we wanted to see lesbian sex or something. We read them because these were great characters.
Yeah.
And they were great stories. You know, men aren't just... Yeah, I'm wanting to read.
Are there many
stuff
great
with
characters
women broken
left
back
in
positions.
Mainstream comics anymore? Because I know they've completely ruined Superman. They've made Batman a wuss.
Oh, don't think on Batman. Robin. I love the Batman.
I love old Batman. I love old Superman. I love old Superman, mostly for Lois Lane. And
they're completely ruined.
In the new universe, in the rebooting, they're
just... I never liked Superman the first.
I think the beauty of most of the more iconic superheroes, though, is they can go for several years with a particularly bad run, and you can get the right writer at the right time with the right character, and they'll completely overhaul it and make them interesting again.
I think the character that we're forgetting, who is one of the most iconic female comic book characters, is Lois Lane. I think she is perhaps...
She often gets dismissed as, well, that's not a superhero.
But
she's
she is.
Probably one of the. But she's also probably one of the most mainstream, recognised female characters from
she
comics.
She might not have superpowers, but she saves Superman quite often. She frequently, Superman goes, oh no, I have to save Lois Lane. Well, and then he gets it, and she's like, well, Lois has already beaten up all the bad guys, and I guess I'll carry her somewhere.
I want to know where those comics are.
Lois did used to have her own comic as well. Like, she used to be popular enough in, I think, the late 60s, early 70s, she had her own title.
In the 50s, she was popular enough to be Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane. Which was the actual title of the comic book.
Yeah.
And then they tried to give her another book, Lois Lane Girl Reporter, which
that's the one
weirdly
people.
Didn't get
yes.
it. That one wasn't really picked up. They did two issues of that, then it died.
Okay, no,
and then last year they tried to do Lois Lane versus the Resistance, and let's all just really forget that one quite quickly. Because that was just awful.
I think when we're talking about iconic superheroes, something we have to keep in mind is that in order for a character to be iconic, it actually has to be recognised by people who don't read comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about Wonder Woman is that she is so iconic that she has survived years of bad writing, years of bad art, years of bad costumes. She hasn't been on our screens since, what, the 70s?
They tried to get her back on our screens with that terrible pilot, but it hasn't worked.
But people still, like, I can talk to random people who are not fans, who are not into fandom, not into science fiction, but women who will say, oh, Wonder Woman. I know who Wonder Woman is. You know, they have an image in their head of Wonder Woman. They see Wonder Woman as a really positive hero in the way that people do for Superman and Batman. There are very few female comic characters. And I think Lois Lane is probably the other one that's the closest.
Who has recognition. Supergirl?
And the others, maybe Batgirl and Supergirl. And it is very interesting that they're all DC characters. It may be changing because of the movies and because Marvel are doing so well with the movies. They haven't been doing so well with the women in the movies until very recently, where they finally produced one that didn't suck. And everybody's just...
Joss.
But still, everybody's just falling over themselves. And other people are saying, well, The Avengers isn't a terribly feminist movie. It's like, no, it's just a movie in which the female superhero's representation doesn't suck. And this is such a rare thing that, please,
it is kind of depressing that we take that as a win.
Yeah, I know.
But it's not just that she doesn't suck.
Yes.
When Whedon wrote it, he took his theory of Buffy, which is... the blonde girl walks into the alley and comes out the winner. In this one, the poor defenseless girl is interrogated, then she kicks everyone's ass and escapes while on the phone.
She did put them on hold.
But she does kick butt all the way through the movie.
She's also respected by the movie. She's not the script, which I think is absolutely really important.
She's not just a character that doesn't suck. She's a character that didn't suck, was the moral compass for several of the male characters, saved their lives a couple of times, and was awesome.
She's also in keeping with the source material. I mean, you really think that this is Natasha, this is the Black Widow, as has been portrayed since she came along in the mid-60s.
Yeah, I've been reading my way through
it's
some
both.
Black Widow.
It's true to the material, but it's also a character who, doesn't suck. She's presented as a woman who kicks butt, who has all sorts of abilities... not just physical abilities, but psychological, cognitive abilities. So,
So I think what we can all agree is that Joss Whedon needs to write everything.
Yes.
Oh, it's
except for more Buffy comics.
It
would be nice if that attitude...
I actually expressed a theory on Twitter a little while ago that the scripting of Avenger was Joss Whedon attempting to prove that he could carry off a solo Wonder Woman movie.
Which I wish he had done, and now that DC has hired somebody else to write the Wonder Woman movie, I look forward to that really bombing.
Because it's the same person who wrote the Green Lantern movie, isn't it?
Oh, really?
I don't know.
Well, good luck.
See, the Green Lantern movie was an interesting sort of example of this I want to think of, because watching the movie, I could see the interesting movie that potentially could have existed if, none of that movie was there. As it was, we were given a story about a stupid fighter pilot who's not good at his job, who crashes planes, and then gets rewarded with superpowers, which is a lovely, iconic story of our age. There's also the story in there, which is hinted at in about three scenes and then disappears, of the story of the ex-girlfriend, who to me is a far more interesting character. She's the one who is the good test pilot, who can't do her job because she's been forced to run the business, who has to deal with the idiotic pilot who crashes the expensive planes. And it's like, you know what? She deserved to be given the... if she'd been given the superpowers, suddenly that Green Lantern movie would have taken a lot more interesting
to me. There is certainly a sense of Green Lantern.
Except that it still would have been Blake Lively. And she is an even worse actor than Ryan Reynolds.
I don't think that's fair, because I don't think she's ever been given the material to prove whether she can act or not.
She's been given some pretty good material over the run of Gossip Girl and several of the really weird independent movies.
I had no idea who she was, and I didn't mind her.
Fine, but I think the trouble is, superhero movies, the way that women are treated, I mean, look at what Jessica Alba said about the way she's been directed in superhero movies, which is basically, you are not allowed, please don't show any emotion whatsoever, because we don't want your face to look fractionally less pretty for any moment of this movie. That's the attitude towards what a woman's role is in
One of the things I'm actually interested in.
They made Jennifer Garner Electra because she is incapable of showing any emotion whatsoever, unless when she's crying, her entire face shrivels up.
One of the things I wanted to bring up, though, in terms of talking about film and TV adaptations, is often there are characters originating from comic books who, because they go, particularly in America, into a popular children's cartoon, have a massive fan base that is significantly higher than the readership most if not all of the superhero comics, yet we don't actually acknowledge them. One of the examples is Starfire from the Teen Titans. That was a massive cartoon in America. That character in particular had an enormous fan base among basically on the sort of tweeny set in the girls.
Well, she's being destroyed, isn't she?
Oh, no, yes.
In the comics. In the comics. But this is the thing. I mean, I find, as somebody who's trying to find female superheroes for my 7-year-old daughter who loves superheroes, the animated series, the various animated series, pretty much every DC, certainly, related animated series that's come out from the early 90s to now, there are so many interesting female characters. The characters are treated with so much more respect than in the comics. And in a lot of cases, with more respect to origins of the characters from the comics anyway. I mean, the versions of Wonder Woman and Black Canary, and even really obscure female characters, Hawkgirl, Fire and Ice, you know, all these little characters who've, you know, turned up in comics and I've liked but have never got much attention, are awesome in animated series. And yeah, Teen Titans, Rayleigh likes Raven best.
Okay, yep.
No, she's completely fallen in love with Raven, and I'm like, you know what? I have Teen Titans comics from the 80s. I'm pretty sure I can't let you read most of them because of all the awful things that happened to Raven. But I'm really glad you like her in the TV show. I'm hiding these comics down.
Okay, so we're wrapping it up, are we?
No, just Rowan had his hand up.
What I was
going
to
say was similar to the
point
you
make,
Rowan, was how much of, I guess, Wonder Woman being iconic was because of the TV series.
Yeah.
And
partly.
Mostly.
Mm. And she's also been around since 1941. There's an advantage that she was probably the first.
Yeah, but I think that the TV aspect must have had
a big thing.
And, there was also the Batman and the Superman, but that was it. There was the only woman that was on a TV show.
Well, again, Lois. I mean, frankly, Lois and Clark, okay, it didn't always have its best times, but. Yeah, but, you know, season one of Lois and Clark and its portrayal of Lois Lane...
It's really good.
...was really, really good. And that, again, bringing the character back to the screens, reminding people that character exists. TV is a really intimate medium because it's different to movies. It seems to have more of a... Especially with younger people, it seems to burrow their way into their heads.
Well, Lois has always been the most interesting character in every on-screen portrayal of Superman, with the exception of the movies, especially Superman Returns. But you go back to the movie serial with Kirk Allen and that chick who ended up being on the Adventures of Superman, Phyllis Coate. She was far more awesome than Kirk Allen's all the time. Then you've got...
Well, she's the character who's allowed to kind of be flawed and do the kind of be the human one.
But
and
not
he's,
that,
he's
but
supposed
she
to stand there being perfect.
She's the one that makes Superman be Superman.
Yeah.
So why does that work in, say, television and cartoons, but we don't seem to get the equivalent effect, particularly in DC, in the comics?
Because there isn't a woman involved in it. So they just go, well, a woman is candy. She looks pretty, and then she makes the men want to do stuff. When you have an actual human woman there playing Lois, or in the case of all the DC direct-to-video stuff, you have one of the directors is a woman, so she's able to say, well, actually, a woman does make expressions occasionally and isn't just about boobs.
I think men are perfectly capable of drawing and writing really good,
they
interestingly
are.
Female characters.
Greg Rucker, but...
it doesn't mean that absolutely they should be left to it, because there are just so many men who patently can't, who just keep getting work in the comics.
Well,
and that is a worry. I think diversity, they need diversity in the creators of all kinds in order to get a more interesting spread of characters.
To what extent is it... I'm trying to think of the way to phrase this. There's often a perception that the reason comics are the way they are, particularly with the depiction of women and the way they're dressed and the way they're posed, is because of some seedy, deliberate intent by the creators and particularly the editors and the publishers. How much of that is actually just blindly dictated by commercial forces? You go for what's most profitable, you don't take a risk, and therefore... you get to the point where we are now.
We know that sex sells. We know that men will buy men's clothes if there is a woman involved in the ad. We know that women will buy women's clothes if there's a woman involved in the ad. Everybody knows that women being sexy will sell people stuff. And the world is very male-driven. This isn't just something that happens in comic books. This is something that happens in a million TV shows. This is something that happens in 99.9% of video games. Mm.
And I think it's worth noting as well that the more money is involved, the more it seems to happen. Like, if you look at, say, the interesting range of female characters on TV, it's not great, but it's way better than movies, and it's a whole different scale of operation.
Because if they pulled the crap on TV that they pulled in comic books, women's groups would be up in arms. GLAAD would stab them in their face.
I think there's also a lack of respect for the readership, and I don't just mean for the female or potential female readership. There's this, it's almost a superstition that they don't know how to pitch comics other than at not even, you know, horny 18-year-old boys. It's their imaginary version of a readership that's just this most, or really insulting image of the male
horny teenagers,
reader.
Yeah.
What were you going
it's
to say,
horrible.
Russell?
I think a lot of it, though, is much more specific things. I mean, some artists are better than others. Some artists are particularly bad. I mean, you can think of artists, and one who immediately comes to mind is Greg Land, who are notorious for the pornifying.
Well, Greg Land actually uses pornographic
as
references.
That's right. So it's a whole of contingent things about particular creators who are in places at particular times. It's a whole of contingent things about history, about just when Marvel established, for example, in the 1960s, a particular time when women were regarded a particular way. It's quite specific things about the movies. You know, the X-Men movies were never, which are great movies that I love, but for a whole lot of contingent reasons, the way they operated in kind of ransacking the whole history of X-Men, they never developed a cinematic version of X-Men at its peak. They never developed a cinematic version of 1980s X-Men. You can come up with a whole series of quite specific things, as well as, yeah, you might have an overarching theory of what's driving it. But I don't think the overarching theory is that, yeah, guys just want to see women posing in the breakback positions. Yeah,
well,
sticking there.
Most of the time, if you go by comic books, guys don't want to see women. If that's that
I don't
seems
think that's true. I think that's too reductive.
I don't think that is actually true of actual human men.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's true of
okay. It's a theory in someone's mind.
Yeah,
yes.
I think
the
okay.
imaginary men but that read all the
I think
comics.
That all
yeah,
comic books are aimed at Dan Didio.
Yeah. Okay. So actual men would probably be interested in reading.
Actual human being men,
yeah.
Like the actual people, would be interested in varied characters.
As long as they're written well and drawn well. Shock.
Yeah.
Grant, I remember you talking about the comic that you want to be cancelled.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn. Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad. About the physical embarrassment of being seen with a comic with the front cover of the first issue as a man. You know, I think it's insulting.
It's
not just the sex cell, it's the weird, seedy porn in your comic cell.
Here's the thing, that if you are a reasonably normal, well-adjusted, white, heterosexual male, such as myself, if you are a regular reader of a series of comic books, it can be mortifying if you go in there to pick up your latest comics order and they've put the most vile, sexist Greg Land art on the front of a comic that you read.
Yeah.
And you want to read it because it's part of a continuing storyline. You have been enjoying it. But you have to buy this item that's... It causes this massive sort of moral quandary in your head when you actually go to buy it. And you do feel a little bit dirty when you come home with, you know...
So the closest thing I ever did to this, as a lot of you know, I wrote some books in the Terminator franchise. I wrote 3 novels. And, you know, I created female characters. I had, in effect, female superheroines because I had people from a different version of the future after Judgment Day who were fighting the Terminators in their future and they were genetically enhanced and whatever. So I'm creating characters who are like the equivalent of superheroines. But I'm assuming that my audience, which would largely have been teenage boys and young men in their early 20s or whatever, that was kind of the audience I was writing for, I'm not sure they want some kind of pornification, Greg Land style, or some kind of prose version of that. I assume they want a damn good story with damn good characters, male and female. I think that is what actual guys
See, you're
want.
Assuming that your audience is intelligent.
Yeah, and I think
and
by and
really
large they are. Maybe
the
publishers aren't making that assumption, but that's the assumption they should be making.
Everybody seems to be, in comic books, seems to be aiming their comics at the lowest common denominator.
Right.
Which is obviously a 14-year-old boy.
I think the biggest problem...
Well, not very bright-foot-year-old boy.
Yeah.
The biggest problem, I think, with the comics industry today is that as a medium, the traditional American comic book that's like a 24-page pamphlet with superheroes in it has been leaking readership consistently since the 1980s. Mm.
And the New 52, the whole thing, you know, we're talking about, it was supposed to be this thing that brought people back to comics.
Yep.
And I think, as you're saying on your podcast recently, Grant, all it basically did was brought back pretty much mostly the male readers.
People my age to about... I'm 35, so basically brought back men aged 35 to 45 who used to read superhero comics and had stopped because they'd become adults, gotten jobs, gotten moved away
from
it. They went back and climbed again.
But
out of curiosity,
there
though.
This is what I was going to say, because the DC's April 2012 sales were roughly equivalent to their April 2010 sales. So they had a massive bump with their relaunch, and it's already dropped right back down.
Well, they pretty much lost me as a reader on most of their titles.
Hmm.
I used to read everything Superman, everything Batman, and everything that could possibly involve Renee Montoya or Batwoman. And I've recently went into All-Star Comics and cut out all the Superman and all the Batman and everything that wasn't Batgirl and Batwoman for my order because I just cannot stand how much they've buggered up Lois Lane.
Yeah, I came back with the New 52 and I was reading like digital comics, which is the big thing for me, was the thing that got me back into comics because I don't have room for more comics in my house. And I had the same thing. I came back to the New 52. I got, I think I started, I read about half of the number ones, and each month it was less and less and less. And I'm looking at what I'm actually reading now, and not counting like new ones that have come along since. It is basically Batgirl and Batwoman is what's left in my pile. That's what I actually want to read.
Yeah.
Everything else has fallen by the wayside.
One thing I just want to ask the three of you, if any of you know off the top of your heads, what do you think is the highest selling female led, in terms of characters, female led comic book in America?
Batgirl.
Right now.
No, Betty and Veronica. Betty and Veronica. It is the thing that no one acknowledges when we have this conversation, is that there is a huge female readership.
And it's nice to see that there's another lesbian comic that's really popular.
Everyone overlooks Archie Comics because they're not sold to the direct market, so they don't go into the direct market sales. Most of the Archie Comics sells considerably in excess of the highest selling superhero comics.
How much is that?
I think Betty and Veronica, for example, I think they sell, I could be wrong, so don't quote me, I think it's between 250 and 300,000 copies an issue. To get that high DC and Marvel base, you have to do something as radical as relaunch Batman at issue one.
Well, one of the really cool things about the Archie comics is that they've actually given a book to a gay man.
Yeah, Kevin Keller.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is not something I see DC or Marvel doing anytime soon.
No.
So. No, and they got the jump as well, because Marvel are currently getting all this cred for doing their gay marriage and all this stuff in their comics. But it's like Archie did it last year. And it's like, you know, Archie got there first. It's you know.
Archie's particularly interesting because that's a comic that was actually inspired by a fictitious pop group. So it's
right.
A cut before, well, we'll talk about Archie. So the problem with that is that it's evolved in a very unusual way to other traditional comics.
Yeah.
So it didn't originally start. It was a piece of merchandise for a fictitious band, which was, you know, basically a monkey's spin-off because the monkeys were real people.
They were a fictitious band as well.
The creators of the monkeys wanted characters that they could totally manipulate, so they invented the Archies. In fact, Sugar, the greatest hit of the Archies, was originally written for monkeys, and that's when they flatly refused to record that. Right? So the creator of the monkeys decided to invent the Archies, so he had total control over them.
I'm just wondering,
and then the same creator evolved the comic book, so there was a complete universe around it. And so that's evolved in a very unusual way to the rest of the comic universe.
It's very interesting when you consider that the big difference between the monkeys and the Archies. The Archies has girls in it, and that's the one that's lasted. I think there's a message in that for all of us. Sorry, Grant.
Well, I was just going to ask, so if you consider Archie Comics and the number of titles that they sell, and on top of that if you consider the significantly large female readership of things like manga, is what we're discussing not a problem of there are no women writing comics, there are no women female characters in comics, there are not enough female readers of comics? It's just a perspective thing. We're claiming to, we think we're looking at the whole field, but instead we're looking at just that bit.
But we're looking for iconic figures, remember?
Yeah.
We're looking at the general culture.
Mm.
And again, it comes back.
Cool ones.
And probably Sailor Moon has a lot more recognition factor even among Western readers than a huge number of female characters from DC and Marvel.
Yeah,
because they had a TV show.
Sorry, can I hand up in the front?
Sailor Moon's had a dozen TV shows.
Well, I stand corrected that.
But not in this country. Sorry, yeah. Can I say again? Yeah, sorry.
Just out of curiosity, what's the, like you were saying, Wonder Woman sort of the main iconic character from the DC world? In way of super villainousness in comic books, is there any particular one that stands up?
Harley Quinn.
Sort of like...
Absolutely, it's a great question.
Catwoman.
And I think with the Dark Knight,
that's iconic,
you know, the new movie coming out, it's going to be really interesting because there are all these rumours that they may have, you know, as we like to say, pulled a Black Widow with the Catwoman, but we don't know for sure. Is it going to be a colossal flop, or is it going to be, you know, another awesome female character on our screens. We don't know yet.
I think it's very hard to tell with Christopher Nolan because I love the character of Rachel in the first film, and then they did the stereotypical women in refrigerators where they kill the female character to promote
the second movie,
to provoke an emotional reaction out of your protagonist,
which doesn't work. I would kill Katie Holmes too. Actress.
Sorry,
I would kill Katie Holmes too.
It wasn't Katie Holmes.
Really?
No, they recast it as Maggie Gyllenhaal.
But that's criticising actors, which is unrelated.
That's right. No, the villain who probably does have some fairly wide recognition in the general culture is Mystique. She made a huge splash in the first X-Men movie in particular. I mean, she kind of gets written out of the third one.
But
she did make quite a splash. And of course, she turns up again in X-Men First Class. We'll see her continuing story. And although we're not talking about actresses, we do have an actress who's now a really big name. And they could do a lot further with Mystique in the next X-Men movie.
I have to say, my daughter has watched X-Men First Class, which, you know, I'm still not quite sure how that happened, but she did manage to. And she fell in love with that character of Raven, who becomes Mystique. Now when she watches all the other X-Men things, she's like, oh, she's a villain again. It's like, yeah, sweetie, I'm sorry.
But we need villains.
Yeah, I know we do, but to her the character is not a villain in First Class. She's the heroine. And well, so no, it's a big disappointment to her now when she comes across Mystique in all the other, because I've just been showing her the 90s X-Men cartoon, which again, great female characters.
In the comics, Mystique is almost like an anti-heroine.
It's the same kind of area as Catwoman.
Same as Catwoman.
And the same, I mean, Magneto as well. You know, a lot of these iconic X-Men villains are so ambiguous and so complex in their motivations and kind of sympathetic that they are always on that line. I mean, even Buddy Sabretooth, which is ridiculous because he's a total psychopath. But with all their major villains, they have a tendency in the X-Men part of that, the industry, to do that. But Mystique's a great character who can really continue to be developed, and I hope that will happen.
One of the things I've noticed with the comics we've been talking about, like current contemporary comics from DC and Marvel that we bring up that are good and have good female characters.
Yes.
The difference I see between them and a lot of the male-centric characters. So I'm, I read a lot of male-centric superhero comics. And the difference, say, between, like, I'm trying to think of a good example. It's not a good example. One of the comics in the New 52 that I actually did enjoy for the first 8 issues was Deathstroke. Bit of a guilty pleasure, but it's an assassin for hire. He goes around, he kills a lot of people. It's a very action-orientated comic, and I did enjoy it. The difference between that and, say, something like Batgirl or Batwoman is character. There is so much more time, particularly the X-Men stuff. Like the Chris Claremont stuff in the 80s, like Generation Hope, what I've noticed is the characters that seem to resonate with female readers are the ones that actually have character development.
Absolutely.
Depth and development, complexity of motivation.
I read Chicks Dig Comics this year for a review, which is a sequel to the Chicks Dig Time Lords series of pop culture essays by some really interesting all-female writers talking about their experience with comics. And one of the things that came up over and over again was the 80s X-Men, that era of creating character-driven storylines and how that benefited not just female characters in the comics, but multiple female storylines.
Yeah.
And the idea of not just having a good female, because Black Widow, I love her in the new Avengers movie. The big flaw as far as seeing that movie as a positive thing for superheroes is that she's just one. And the really great ensembles have multiple interesting female characters who talk to each other and do things as well as interacting with the male characters. And, the best ensembles have more than one. And that's why it deeply, deeply wounds me whenever something like Justice League America, which I love normally, gets reinvented to just have the one female character in it. And then I walk away.
And the fact that she's actively objectified in her first appearance, which was...
I walk away.
The point
every
where
time.
Wonder Woman turned up, and I can't remember which one it is out of the Flash and Green Lantern, the first response to seeing Wonder Woman is, I call dibs, is actually the point where I stopped buying that comic, and I haven't even looked at an issue since.
But Tansy, just following up, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Assuming Joss Whedon is going to direct the second Avengers movie, which will happen, what female characters, would you like to see added to that ensemble?
Okay, well, I know that he has a soft spot for the Wasp, and apparently he was trying to get her in basically pretty much at every draft process and had to have an intervention with him because it didn't fit the story. The Wasp is really interesting. The trouble with my relationship with the Wasp as a character is that I came to her through the Ultimates, which is a very different interpretation, and I really liked that representation of her as a competent scientist and as a really interesting character. So now when I'm reading like the real Marvel Universe stuff, it's like, oh, that's actually a completely different character.
Well, when Joss was writing the first Avengers movie, he was actually using the Ultimates as his inspiration for the movie.
Well, the other thing is there's a really good animated movie which is sort of semi-based on the Ultimates but for kids, and so it leaves out like the wife beating and the other problematic violent aspects of the Ultimates. And Janet is in that as the Wasp. And it's really cool because they have those things like, well, we need a really intelligent scientist who can do this stuff, so we're going to get Janet in, and okay, we've got to have a husband too. Fine. You know, they bring in Ant-Man as the one that they're kind of embarrassed to have on the team, but Janet is the cool one.
Yeah.
And I really like that because I was so interested in her from the Ultimates. I went and researched the character and found out that she was like Sue Storm, one of these who was the token woman in the team very early on. She was the one who had the least powers for a really long time.
Yeah.
But in more recent times, she has been revamped.
And I think
she's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I also, I mean, I personally am dying to see the She-Hulk represented on screen. I am deeply, deeply obsessed with the She-Hulk. I've read the Dan Slott series, and I really love it. I've now read the earlier one,
the
John Byrne, which, again, I find fascinating. Slightly, very different takes on the character, but both very interesting. And I would love to see, now that we have such a good Hulk, and frankly, I like the Hulk in this Avengers better than I've ever liked him on screen, I want to see him as part of a story that is about She-Hulk. And I think that the iconic nature of the Hulk might actually let that happen. Not necessarily in the next Avengers movie, I'd like to see it. If they're going to do another Hulk movie, that's the one I want to see.
One of the female Avengers we're probably not going to see that I've been reading about is the Scarlet Witch.
Because of the mutant thing.
She's related to a character currently owned by Fox in terms of screen rights.
They do.
It's a shame.
The honest answer is they don't actually know who owns the screen rights to the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver because they never thought when Marvel formed their contract with Fox for the X-Men what to do with characters that are kind of trapped between superhero
franchises. It's such a shame because wouldn't you love to let Joss Whedon write the second Avengers movie and have like Ian McKellen's Magneto pop by? And you know, we were all waiting for the Wolverine cameo and it wasn't there.
But as long as Fox owns X-Men, that won't happen. Mm. But my understanding was that Marvel believes that either Fox Disney, whoever it is, however that conglomerate actually works, that either could use Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, the way the contracts are written. So, but it would be, to me, it would be a great pity for Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch to turn up, you know, without the whole connection with Magneto. I mean, one of the big things about them, even though it was a retcon at the time, is that, they are the children of the big bad villain. So I would like to see Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch turn up in the X-Men movies, but you wouldn't get Joss Whedon, of course. Mm. But no one said Carol Danvers.
Oh, well, that's the other thing, because she's just being rebooted in the comics as Captain Marvel.
It's in the process.
It's looking like a very exciting comic.
Being written by Kelly Sue DeConnick.
I would very much like to see her in it. I think that would be a very, very interesting character to bring in. And because it's the whole thing, because people are saying things like, well, what about, say, She-Hulk? And they're like, well, we have a Hulk. Yes, it's very nice. It's the thing you want to bring. Ideally, you want to bring in someone who offers something different. I'd love to see a female character who is a bruiser in some way, who is actually a really physically powerful character, as a contrast to Black Widow, who is very intelligent and does all her stuff, but ultimately is not completely technically superpowered. Yeah. Though I've been reading lots of comics, and apparently she secretly is. So there you go.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of the early '80s Spider Woman, like the original.
I was going to ask about Spider Woman. I haven't managed to read anything yet.
The original one. You get them in the big, like black and white. You can get two volumes, and they're really, really cool.
My worry with Spider-Woman and She-Hulk, I must say, is they do seem too much like legacy characters, even though Spider-Woman really has no relationship with Spider-Man,
not particularly at
all.
They would certainly be perceived that way.
Yeah, they would be perceived that way. Whereas I'd love to see, I think it'd be a great coup to bring in Carol Danvers under the name Captain Marvel.
They are, as you say, about
to do that. They're in the process of moving it through the pipeline in the comics. If Carol Danvers, a female character, was presented to the wider public, the big culture in a huge movie directed by Joss Whedon as under the name Captain Marvel, that becomes a huge cultural shift.
Absolutely, and you know, it's very simple because they're planning to do sequels to all the other superhero Marvel movies before the next Avengers. That's the general plan. All they have to do is introduce one cool female superhero into each of those and then we'll be spoiled for choice.
Is there a hand up for that?
As the film sequel was definitely announced last week and the new series starts, what do you think of Hit Girl?
I really, really don't like Kick-Ass the comic, particularly the sequel.
Yeah.
I think it's a very nasty, mean-spirited work.
Well, apparently the Hitchcock series is even worse because the first
one. It is. It's don't get me started on Mark Miller, please. I will be here for an hour. I like the character in the context of its film. I actually did enjoy that character. I really like Chloe. That's more because I like Chloe Grace Moretz, the actress. Like, she's a very, very good actor. But, I don't know.
What, not politically correct enough?
I hate the term political correct. You're hitting on my buttons. I hate the term political correct. I hate it.
I just don't like nasty, mean-spirited people who are extremely violent. Like, it's not really something I'm interested in. If the only thing about you is that you are evil and you don't like people, or you've been brought up to not like everybody and beat the living crap out of them, I don't find that interesting enough to you being violent.
It's quite upsetting when the only female characters who get the credibility, who are seen as, oh, they're cool, are the ones who are horrible and messed up and violent. Which is why She-Hulk, I would love to see, and I know I'm talking about it a lot, I would love to see something like that give some sort of film or TV representation. Because the thing about her as a character is that she's fun.
She's
awesome and she's funny. And I think that's something we haven't seen enough of in female superheroes. It's really easy to get the female superhero character and say, well, let's explain why she explain why she wants to fight crime, because we have to give a motive to a female character who wants to justice.
Or
so obviously she has a traumatic experience in her childhood, and it's all really grim and gritty, and we can throw in some sex and all that and put her in a leather cat suit, and it'll all be, and men will really sort of lap that up and say, that's a cool female character. So there's a strong female character that counts. It's like, no, I want to see fun, strong female characters who are funny in comedy or humorous superhero stuff.
Well, okay, we've all established that we want more female characters, but how do we get them? How do we make more iconic female characters? How do we make enough noise that somebody actually listens?
You give them to the really good writers and the really good artists instead of the people who don't do it.
Do we as people do?
Oh.
We don't own any comics.
Oh, well, that's easy. You go out and you buy the comics that you want. And the trouble is, it's hard to find
them. It's a very slow... I think the thing is, it's usually... This sort of thing is a very, very slow process.
But there is plenty of evidence showing that they don't actually really listen that much to how well...
I think the
creators
do, though. I mean,
do
from,
they?
From my very limited dealings, very,
shall,
very limited.
Shall we look at some evidence?
But, I mean, all I can say is, I mean, if you actually go and talk to someone like Mike Carey, say, they are very open to talking about these things. And, talk to people. Blog about it.
That's the other thing. If you see a comic that you like, then tell people.
Same
like,
as
actively
else.
Talk
That's
people
the big thing about it. It's letting people know about the good stuff, I think, is fun. I think it's important to critique the bad stuff. But, if we stop reading if you stop reading all the books that have any female superheroes in because they're problematic, then you run out of everything. And so trying desperately to find the good stuff and hold on to it and tell people about it.
One of the little bits of activism I've heard of before, which I like, is if you've got an extra $4.50 or $5, however much a single issue of a comic is, if there's a comic that you like, particularly in this case, but what we're talking about, a positive female character, a strong
female creator,
buy an extra copy and say to the person behind the counter at your local comic shop, could you just put this in the drop box as an anonymous present for someone who you think might like it? Because there's lots of people out there who probably love a lot of these comics, but because they don't get very actively advertised by the comics companies and promoted, they may not even know they exist. And so that's one way to build the readership. It costs you $4 once. If we all did it once, that's hundreds more readers.
But we all have our capacity to contribute to the, that positive buzz about the way the Black Widow is handled in the Avengers. We all have a capacity to contribute to the positive buzz about, wouldn't it be great if, She-Hulk or the Wasp or Carol Danvers, whoever your favourite character is, or all of them, let's have, female, balanced ensemble. We create that buzz.
That Angie Harmon, the actress from Law & Order, has found out somehow about She-Hulk. And not only spoke on a TV chat show and has tweeted and stuff like that about how she wants to play that role. There's no property out there for her. She just wants to play that role.
Yeah.
To the point where she got herself painted green, took a publicity shot of herself punching a broken pavement, at which point was when Dan Slott, the writer of the original, or the more recent She-Hulk comic, said, I'd write the pilot for free. I think the idea of actively fighting for these stories to exist and to
interesting that a woman like Angie Harmon is fighting for characters like She-Hulk, because her biggest hero, of course, is Sarah Palin, which you would not think would automatically translate to wanting... Seriously, she is a massive gunnut Republican who is for Sarah Palin, and if she is our biggest advocate for wanting awesome female superheroes. We have a weird problem.
Well, I don't think that
the
politics...
People are complex, though.
People, yeah, I don't think that politics are necessarily relevant. I think it's important that, if female superheroes, you don't just want people who you agree with to buy them. You want other people to buy them, too,
yeah.
So they'll be popular.
So we want female superheroes at any cost?
We are out of time. Sadly. So thank you very, very much for coming on, and please thank our wonderful panel.